Hello and welcome back to Perfectly Paranormal, episode 74. My name's Anna Schmidt, and I'm here every week to share with you true paranormal encounters and information about devils, demons, and dark energy beings that no one else talks about. And today, we are navigating roads, highways, accident sites, and paranormal influences who can inhabit travel points along the way. And also, most importantly, what you can do if you experience sudden shifts in your thinking, emotions, and focus while driving, things you can do to help keep you safe. Now, today I'm sharing two experiences, one of mine and one from a mate who's in the UK, and also some rather well-known Australian experiences of haunted highway encounters that I've done some research for online, because it's always interesting to know what other people experience in particular locations. Now, I've only focused on Australia today, but there are also many haunted highways, haunted roads in the UK, in the United States, and probably elsewhere in the world. I may do a future episode on those down the track. Accident sites anywhere can attract the paranormal energy feeders, and roads and highways are no different. Any road where there's been compounded fatal or near-fatal accidents create traumatic energetic vibrations in and on the location. So on the road, but also these energetic vibrations can seep into the land. And can these accidents, car damage or loss of life, can it be put down to driver stupidity, poor car maintenance, substandard roadways, it's quite often a point, poor layout of the road design in the first place, or is it something else? Most of the time, I think it's a combination of many of the components that I've just mentioned. But what if? What if there is an energetic aspect that people just don't even think about? What I know from doing energetic clearings of homes and properties is that negative energy, the vibrations or the frequencies, can disrupt the flow of energy in the land. And also anything that's built on those sites doesn't have to be a house. It doesn't have to be a car park or a stadium. It can be major highways. It can be minor roads. And 90% of the time, it can be contributed to the human cause of creating emotional buildup, traumas in people's lives that occur while they're driving. Now, it can also be natural disasters that happen around roads. When there can be road slips, landslides, earthquakes that disrupt the flow of the roadways. All this energy, all these happenings create a disrupted, a disturbed energetic flow within the land. Now, like I said earlier, it can be on the land, but it can also be the what we call the earth energy lines that flow around the earth. House healers and energy workers see these earth energy lines. Just imagine in your mind a ball of yarn, and you've got all these strings going in all different directions, and they're all sort of tightly wound together. That is what these earth energy lines are, and they carry energy around the earth. When they're disrupted, I quite often call them tears in the earth energy lines. I find them in properties where there's been traumas on the land, where there may have been massacres, where there may have been other energetic disruptions. They can have these tears, which means that the earth energy isn't flowing the way that it should. It's not free flowing. It's got these blockages or these barricades or these buildups of emotional energy imprints from people or traumas that have happened in the land. And these imprints need to be cleared so that the energy can then flow again. So I worked on a home recently. I am going to get back to this episode, but this is valid. There were some people that had an issue in their home. When I tuned into the property, the land had 90% of the problems. And because the house had been built where there had been mass human trauma in the past, I think it was somewhere around 300-400 years ago, all that energy was simmering on and under the land's surface. When you can go in, identify what the cause is, talk to the land, it shares with you what it wants cleared. Once all that detrimental energy is cleared, you ask for the healing of that land, the land's energy improves. So this was under a home, but it also applies to roads and highways. Now, if major highways or roads are built over or near areas of historic mass human trauma, the land at those sites is infused. It's, a friend of mine calls it marinating. The land is marinating in this detrimental energy, and it's constantly pumping out a disturbed vibe. People driving over these roads, over these locations, not everyone feels this disrupted energy, but more people than not actually do. Their physical body feels it, and they put it down to, oh, I'm tired, oh, I've got a headache, oh, I didn't have breakfast, oh, I ate too much chocolate, you know, too much caffeine. They don't think that there could possibly be an energetic influence in the roads that they're traveling on. Now, pets, even pets in cars can feel these energetic shifts in the road. So if you notice a sudden change in your pet's behavior, observe every time your pet comes with you and you drive over a particular location. Look at the way your pet behaves. Does your pet feel disturbed? Is it barking? Is it growling? Is it trying to hide? Does it just look frightened? You'll know when your pet's disturbed. And a way to test this and a way to experiment is to then take a different route to get to the location that you need to go to. Does the pet's behavior change? Is their focus more normal? Are they relaxed? Are they just looking out the window or gone to sleep on the seat? You will know pets are highly sensitive to energetic changes in the environment. Now, as we're talking about roads and highways with disrupted energy, you know where I'm going next with this. Paranormal entities are attracted to these negative vibrating sites. And why they're there is simply because it's an energetic food source for them. And their presence of these beings adds to the detrimental energetic vibe being pumped out day after day. And people just feel the changes in the roads. Now, I'm going to be talking about my mate in the UK very soon. And he is one of these people. He is a prime example of feeling changes in the energetic environment when he's on the road. Also, too, people's fear, paranoia and anxiety of known haunted roads and highways can add to the negative energetic buildup. If you're expecting to experience something negative or out of the ordinary, or there'll be that ghost there, you're pumping out a vibration that is adding to the already negative energy that's in that place where there may have been an accident. Someone may have passed away on that site. You're adding your fear and your paranoia to that place. Now, some people thrive on this paranormal adrenaline rush and they get their energetic fix on these dark roads and highways. And that's fine, but they don't realize what they're adding to that already negative energetic buildup that is present. Now, I've worked with many people who've experienced severe anxiety and panic attacks only when driving, and it's usually on particular stretches of the road. Now, this can be detrimental energy in the land, as I've mentioned already, but also the emotional vibration that drivers are pumping out every single day as they're cruising along the roadways. Because people are always thinking about their life struggles, their work, their relationship issues, their money issues, anything that's going on in their life that's causing them some sort of distress or trauma, some people think about it when they're driving. And when they're sitting at traffic lights, they're all sitting there and they're just pumping out this vibe as they drive off, leaving a little pool of energy in the road that then adds to what is already there. Now, I don't leave Tassie very often. That's short for Tasmania. Us Taswegians, we call it the Apple Isle, or we call it Tassie. So if you hear me call it that in the future, that is what I'm referencing. So I don't leave Tassie much. I'm really a homebody. I just am. But I've had a few interesting energetic road incidences that I shared back in episode 46 that was called Driving and Paranormal Distraction. Later on in this episode, I'm going to share the most memorable story from that episode. It was rather interesting. It was called Headaches and Paranormal Hitchhikers. Now, we're going to look at some rather well-known Australian haunted road sites. And if you've ever experienced a ghostly happening on one of these sites or another place where you live, I would love to hear about it. And you can email me at spiritualbeing44@gmail.com. And if you're not sure of the spelling, my email link is in the description box. Now, as I'm sharing these reference sites, I'll also share the information in the description box as well as to where I got this interesting information from. So let's start with a location that's in Shell Harbour in New South Wales that's called the Bloody Mile. The Princess Highway passes through three states of Australia, New South Wales, Victoria, and South Australia. And it has earned the name at a particular location between Dunmore and Minnamurra. It's now called the Bloody Mile. Now, I'm not swearing. That is truly, truly what it's called. Look it up on the internet. There have been 13 murders recorded in that one particular location. I'm not going to share details because some of them are rather gruesome. There's also been mentions of suicides and multiple car crashes and also some minor accidents that have said to have occurred in this one particular stretch of the highway between around about 1836 and 1980. And to this day, unsuspecting drivers and passengers have reported seeing numerous sights of ghostly apparitions wandering up and down the roadside. Some people see the ghosts. Others see sort of dark, wafting shadows or shapes darting about on that stretch of the highway. And I wouldn't be surprised with the number of deaths that have occurred that there are some rather large pools of energetic build-up in that location, both emotional build-up and trauma build-up. I've actually had a large influx of spirits coming to me looking for transition. Now, I usually find that happens when I tune into places. I'm very, very sensitive to locations. And when I did look up this information on the internet, of course, there is a photo of the road. That is a major trigger for me. And then they mention the location. So I should have known. But you know what? I'm happy to help transition spirits. The spirits coming here all the time. So if I can help some souls that have been wandering by the roadside for 100 years, then so be it. Now, there's an interesting read on paranormal.com.au, and I've left the link in the description box. And if you're one of those people that want to read in depth about the details of the 13 murders that occurred in that area, you can check out that link. So next, we're going to look at Wakehurst Parkway in Sydney in New South Wales. Now, this stretch of road is, well, said to be known as Australia's most haunted road. So Wakehurst Parkway is a main road near French's Forest. It's about 26 kilometres from the Sydney CBD. And it's well known for its creepy atmosphere and its long history of sadly being a dumping ground for murder victims. And there's also a near fatal crashes over the years on that site. And people quite often will go there just to see the ghostly apparitions of a little girl in a white dress that's been seen near the Middle Creek Bridge. And there's also a woman, there's also a lady that seems to be dressed in nun-like clothing, who for around about the last 5 decades, about the last 50 years, she likes to sit in the back seat of people's cars. And you imagine driving through there, and all of a sudden you look in the rear vision mirror and you're seeing the outline of an elderly lady sitting in the back seat of your car. I think you would find that rather scary. Now, I wonder if she's sitting in the back seat of the car because maybe she died in a car. And she just keeps repeating that same pattern, that same action over and over again on that stretch of road where she died. I don't think that she's sitting in the cars to purposely frighten them. Maybe she doesn't know she's died. It quite often happens. If you listen to many of the episodes where I've talked about spirits who die suddenly, sometimes they don't know they've died and they tend to repeat their behaviours, the location where they passed away. Now, this is interesting. When researching Wakehurst Parkway in Sydney, there was a lady named Bianca Biasi. I think I've said it right. I hope so. She is a filmmaker. Now, she did some research while creating a documentary about this ghost. And she found that it could very well be a lady who was known as Kelly. Now, Kelly may not have been a nun at all, or she could have been a nurse who worked and died at a nearby quarantine station, which is located on that very stretch of road. And if you can imagine, 50 years ago, the uniforms that a nun, or the habit that a nun would have worn, may have been quite similar to the uniform of a nurse. So it's important not to jump to conclusions. We've all seen the movies about the nun, and it instantly brings fear into people's minds, but it might simply just be a lady who passed away on the road wearing a uniform that looks similar to a nun's uniform. You've always got to unpack these situations. I mean, if someone turned up in my back seat, or actually I had a young boy named Josh who rode home with me from a local, now abandoned mental health facility, he just liked to go for rides in cars. Maybe Kelly liked to go for rides in cars. Who knows? You know, it's not always the most negative thing that these spirits are doing. So always think outside the box if something like this happens to you. Don't be instantly frightened, but just be kind and just think about it. If you see a spirit on the edge of the road, just have a think about what that person's gone through in their life that actually brought them to this place in time. So let's look at a rather interesting place again in Sydney. Sydney seems to have a lot of spiritual activity. Let's look at a street with no name that's located in Annandale, which is in Sydney in New South Wales. They've described this street as a disturbing no-name street in Sydney's inner west, where there's a viaduct and also a surrounding park that makes many people feel very uncomfortable. People have said that they feel darkness there, they feel evil presences there, and a lot of people walking there at night, they experience frightening, unsettling energy. They hear random footsteps with no one around. They sometimes smell bad smells. And you know what that means? If it's not something rational, like I talked about back in episode 63 with dark beings and paranormal stinks, it might be a darker entity letting you know that they're in that vicinity. People have also said that they felt sudden temperature fluctuations and that when walking their pets there, their pets' behaviours suddenly change quite rapidly. They growl, they bark, they pull on their leads, they're hiding, they're getting tangled between their owner's legs, and they're frightened, they can't cope. Like I said before, pets are great paranormal radars. And no wonder, as this street and this park area have a long, mysterious history of numerous bodies found there. So you could imagine the spirits of the people whose bodies are present in that location and also the dark entities that are there that are feeding on the spirits' emotions, feeding on the people's fear driving around or they're walking through that park. Now, before we get into our stories, we're going to look into the UFO realm for a moment. We're going to go to Olympic Dam Highway, which is in South Australia. The Olympic Dam Highway is in the Woomera area, which is a prohibited access location in South Australia that is connected to weapons testing and it's also a rocket range. Now, this area and that particular highway is well known for its fast-moving glowing orbs. How exciting! I would love to see one of those. And there's been many, many UFO sightings of otherworldly visitors that go back to at least 1950. I found a document online that was released from its confidential nature, which I've linked down in the description box if you want to have a look at it. If close enough to moving cars, I imagine the presence from these UFOs could disrupt the electronic devices and the functioning of the vehicles. Have you ever experienced sudden changes in how your car reacts to the road conditions when driving? Anything that can't be rationally explained. I had to pull over one night when I was driving home along a piece of road that I use all the time. There have been a lot of accidents at this road, and I'm always very, very aware and to be super, super focused in that location because my brain gets a little bit wobbly, as I call it, a little bit of brain fog, don't feel focused, don't feel centered in my thinking when I'm driving over some of these sites. So when I was driving home over this particular site one day, my headlights suddenly turned off. And I'm like, what the? Luckily, there was no one behind me because I went into a slight panic. As you can imagine, you're driving along and all of a sudden your headlights turn off. And I just had the car serviced. So I know there's nothing rationally wrong with the headlights. So I managed to pull over and I tested the lights. Didn't work. They just simply would not turn on. And I'm like, right, how am I going to get home? The park lights did work. And I thought, it's 11:30 at night and I'm only about 10 minutes from home and I'm not in the city. I reckon I could probably wangle it and get home reasonably safely. So I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking about it. All of a sudden, my headlights came on. I know what this is. This is the dark energy beings playing with my headlights. Some of these beings don't like energy workers, as I've mentioned before in other episodes. They feel threatened. They think that you're going to clean up that area that they're feeding off, and they get a little bit naughty. They get a bit rebellious. So me just driving along, and they've just turned my lights off to frighten me. Well, it didn't work. Well, it kind of did for a little minute. For about 30 seconds, I had a little mild panic. And I went, pull yourself together, Anna. So I pulled over and did what I said. But after I sat there and had a little conversation, and I said, look, whoever's here, if you're a spirit, I can help you transition. If you're a darker entity, know that I have no interest in clearing this piece of road. And as I said that, remember, I said the headlights had come on and I'm just sitting there. The headlights gave a little flicker and I went, ah, they're using the headlights to communicate with me. And I repeated my message because I wanted to see that flicker again and it didn't happen. Oh, that's the paranormal addict in me. But they'd got the message. They went, right, Anna's not going to be doing any energetic clearing here. We'll just let her go and we'll leave her headlights on. Now, within the next few days, I did take my car to see the car mechanic. He found nothing wrong with them. He did look at me quite strangely. I didn't tell him the whole story because the poor man would have thought I was nuts. Now, I have to say that as I was writing the notes for this episode, sometimes I multitask. I was listening to an archaeology video. I love my time team and looking at all the archaeology and all the Viking and the Anglo-Saxon findings in the UK. So there I am listening to this archaeology video on YouTube at the end of a massive multi-laned highway building site. They found an old burial site, hundreds and hundreds of ancient graves, possibly a settlement under this soon-to-be major highway. Because you can imagine, when they're building these massive 4 or 6 lane highways, they've got to dig up a lot of land. And sometimes when they dig up this land, they find these ancient sites. So this lady had gone in with the presenters, with the archaeologists, and they did a video about these multi-laned highways. And they wouldn't have been able to retrieve all of the bones and then rehouse them somewhere else. So under that road, under that very large 4-lane highway in the county of Kent, people are going to be driving across ancient gravesites and ancient settlements. I'm sure it happens all over the UK. But I do wonder what the presence of these graves and ancient sites, do they have an energetic effect on the motorways and the people who are driving on them? Now, my mate Dean, this is our first story today. Well, second. I always slip in little stories. My mate Dean is a really, really good friend of mine. He lives in Yorkshire, in the north of the UK, and he has struggled with driving with anxiety and panic attacks on major highways for many, many years. And many of you may relate to his experience today. Now, I asked Dean if he would like to share his experience. This is his major experience. This was the turning point for him to look at how he's going to manage his driving in the future. And this is what he wrote. Hi, Anna. Here's what happened with my first experience with my driving anxiety, with my panic attacks when driving on one of the major motorways here in the UK. My partner and I had been down to visit family and our newborn first grandson, who lived in Bath at the time. And it was a Monday morning, and as we waved them goodbye and set off on the long journey back home to Yorkshire, traffic was fairly light as we set off through the ancient city of Bath. And after about 40 minutes, we joined the major M4 motorway. We were both pretty tired after having sat up most of the previous night babysitting so that Thomas and Sue could get a night out on their own for the first time in months. And on the whole, we were kind of in pretty good spirits, but we were a bit tired all the same. I drove along the M4 without much thought of anything in particular, and progress was pretty good. We took a left sweeping bend and joined the very busy M5 motorway up to Birmingham and to the north. And I drove down the slip road and entered into the left-hand lane. And all of a sudden, I was surrounded by heavy traffic all around me. And almost straight away, a feeling of unease rose up inside me from nowhere. I found myself feeling really unsafe and very vulnerable. Firstly, I tried to distract myself by turning on the radio, but it was just a blaring noise. I was unable to concentrate on either the presenter or the music. So I wound down the window and I turned off the radio, and I became more and more frantic in my actions. But then came the physical symptoms. Firstly, I had dry mouth. Then my leg began to shake uncontrollably. I was sweating and I was constantly running my hand through my hair. I just looked at Joan and I said, I have to get off this road. Now, luckily, the next motorway turnoff was a couple of miles ahead. But by this time, it was virtually impossible for me to drive the car. I thought I was having some sort of mental breakdown. And bit by bit, our car got slower and slower. And the lorries were blasting their horns. This was the most frightening experience of my life. I felt like I was totally out of control of my reality. And by some miracle, I made it off the motorway and onto the services rest area car park. By this time, Joan was worried sick. It's okay, I said. I just need some sleep. So I pushed back the driver's seat and closed my eyes. But my mind, it was just spinning faster and faster, and there was no way that I could force myself to settle. I said to Joan, it was just this motorway that had caused this scary episode, and that I would set my sat-nav to avoid these large roads, and we would go cross country. But it was no better. In fact, the distress only increased. I genuinely could see no way that I could continue this journey, and even thought about asking Joan to take me to the nearest hospital. And with that, Joan told me to pull the car over and that she would drive back home on the motorway, but she would need my assistance to navigate the roads. So we set off back onto the motorway with Joan driving. And even as a passenger, the journey was a nightmare. Apart from when Joan needed my help, I spent most of the time with my eyes closed. And after about 4 hours of hell, we finally made it off the motorway and onto more familiar local roads. And I asked Joan to stop the car. I needed to take over the driving again. Back in the saddle as soon as possible, as they say. We arrived home, and I was in pieces inside, but I managed the best I could to hide this from Joan. Now, after 3 years have passed, I'm still struggling to get back to full confidence while driving on these large motorways. Although on our most recent trip down to see the family last month, I did manage to drive both there and back on some of the UK's busiest motorways. And in my mind, this was a monumental achievement and one that I will continue to build on. Did his energy body pick up on an overload of energetic imprints on the motorway? We're talking emotional imprints, trauma imprints, accident imprints, natural disturbances in the land from what's gone on in the past. Very, very possibly, some people are super, super sensitive to energetic shifts in the Earth's environment. And believe me, motorways carry a lot of energy. We're always dropping emotional imprints everywhere we go. It is just a part of being human. Some people have no issues with picking up on the trauma in the land, picking up on these emotional imprints on the highways. They just simply just pings off their energy fields. But other people are like sponges. Now, for Dean, there may have been other issues that have gone back to maybe childhood. Maybe he had an experience on one of those large motorways when he was a child, and he's never forgotten it. You'd be surprised what we store in our bodies from our childhood, from family trips that we go on, maybe seeing an accident on the motorway, maybe their parents' car having an accident. I haven't spoken to Dean about that, but that just popped into my mind. But I've worked with Dean on understanding how the Earth's energy works and to observe and note the areas where he has these difficulties. And like he said, I spoke to him since he'd had that trip back to Bath to see the family again. And he was so confident, like he was so excited that he's actually driven on this large highway all the way there and back. That was a big achievement for Dean. And once you have that achievement once, you can only build on it and it makes it easier and easier for you to drive the next time. So he has to be aware and observe and put some of the practices in place that we're going to talk about very soon. Some of the things that you can do when you're in those moments of sudden panic and you're experiencing sudden negative or downward spiraling shifts in your thinking, your emotions, and your focus when driving. We're going to look at some suggestions that you can use to keep you safe on the road. These are some of the things that I use and some of the suggestions that I've put to my clients. And I also say, always see your doctor to rule out any medical or mental health issues that could possibly be causing your anxiety on the road. There's always something that causes these issues. So what I do, I've outlined, let me see how many. We're going to look at 7 aspects that you can use when you're driving. Number 1, do some deep breathing. This really helps me when I'm driving across our busiest bridge here in Tasmania. So we're looking at the Tasman Bridge, which is 5 lanes of traffic. And there are no barriers between the traffic coming towards you and you travelling on this bridge. Thousands of people use this bridge every single day. And I do get stressed. I mean, I've been driving for 30 plus years and I travel over that bridge quite a number of times each week. But it still stresses me. So some of the things that I do is I do my deep breathing. I'm aware of the traffic that is around me, but I'm totally focusing on my lane. Who's coming in my lane? Who's leaving my lane? In my peripheral vision, I can see all the other traffic, but I don't let myself get distracted. So the deep breathing helps me to center myself in my body. Number 2, while you're driving, you can energetically ground yourself. Energetic grounding is so important. It is not woo-woo stuff like people think. Our energy body can be separated from the physical body during trauma and other life happenings, things that upset us, things that suddenly shock our bodies can separate our energy body or our light body from our physical body. So grounding your energy is really, really important. I always say to people, do it every day. Do it every morning when you get out of bed, before you have breakfast and you get dressed and you go off to work. Make sure that you're grounded because you need to be in your physical body. Now, sometimes if I'm driving across, we'll use the Tasman Bridge again as another example. I'm driving across this bridge and all of a sudden the deep breathing's not helping. It kind of is, but it isn't, and I need something else. I'm saying to myself in my head, grounding, grounding. You can ground your energy by visualizing yourself being pulled into Mother Earth, or you can visualize your energy body coming back into your body. Obviously, you keep your eyes open. Everything's about intention when you do this sort of energy work. I can drive and I can ask to be grounded while I'm focusing on the road, while I'm doing some deep breathing. It's just become a habit for me to do this now. Sometimes when I feel a little bit stressed on our roads, and when I'm driving to the west coast of Tasmania with very, very windy roads, very, very windy, like cliffhanger type roads, not my favorite type of roads to drive on, but I need to get to the west coast, and that particular windy road is the quickest way to get there. So I just take my time. Don't need to rush. Dan mentioned some other things earlier, but I'm going to add to them. So number three is use sensible distractions. Things like chewing gum or lollies or singing in the car. Isn't singing wonderful? I only do that when I'm in the car by myself. But I find singing is a great way to keep me focused on what I'm doing and not be stressed about all the other cars that are on the road. I also like to listen to the radio. Now, this can be music, or it can be talking. If you're very technologically minded, you could set up a podcast that you listen to when you're driving. This is a really good suggestion that someone gave me the other day. Have a calming music playlist ready to go. Something that is going to relax you. You can open a window. I use this quite a lot because I find the sudden cold air that hits me in the face, that is enough of a distraction to help me center and help me focus again. Sometimes when it's raining, I know this will sound odd, sometimes when it's raining, I'll actually open the window slightly so I get a few little spatters of rain on my face because I get quite stressed when I'm driving and the windscreen wipers are going flat out. I just need that little bit of cool air and the occasional sort of splatter of the rain on my face. Wind your window down, you know, 1 or 2 inches. And that is enough to help me stay focused on what I'm doing. And I don't have it open maybe for more than, oh, it could be anywhere from 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. Also too, when you're driving, talking about temperature, I find I drive better when I'm slightly colder. If I get too hot, I get sleepy. Now, number four, observe when and where you feel anxious. Do some research. You might be sensing a trauma that has occurred on a particular road. Do car trips trigger personal trauma from childhood, which is something I mentioned earlier, like parents yelling at you, you were feeling sick, or you were hungry, or you were made to eat breakfast, which is one thing that my parents did to me. They made me have Weet-Bix and milk before we went on very long trips. But it didn't stay down long. I used to get very, very car sick, and it made me stressed. So I find that I drive better if I'm a little bit hungry. Now, some people are afraid of their parents driving. Some parents drive too fast. Childhood triggers can really simmer away in the subconscious and affect us as adults. Now, number five, drive in the lane with all the slow pokes, as I call the granny lane. Let the speeders and the large trucks and the buses and the multi-story car carrying vehicles, let them bypass you. One thing that triggers me on the road is log trucks. We have a lot of logging here in Tasmania. I do not like to drive alongside a log truck. Behind and in front, not a problem. I do not like to drive alongside them. So I will just change lanes. I will purposely drive a little bit slower to let log trucks go past because I don't know why, but I am scared of driving next to log trucks, so I don't remember anything from childhood triggering this, but who knows? We block things out, things that we don't want to remember. Actually, coming to mind as we speak, when I was a child, we lived in Taralia, which was a hydro village in the middle of Tasmania where they managed the electricity. My dad worked for the hydro. I remember getting thrown off the back seat because we're talking probably mid-1970s, where we didn't have to wear seatbelts in the back seat. I remember getting thrown on the floor and waking up. I reckon I was about 7 or 8, and waking up and looking up to see these trees on fire. Now, Taralia was in the bush, and for some reason, we found ourselves confronted by a very large tree that was over the road, and it was on fire. And to me as a child, it was a very large log. So there you go. There's me observing my thinking and thinking back to childhood, and that simply came up as I'm recording this episode. That could be one reason why I'm a little bit skittish around log trucks. Now, number 6, as Dean found, getting back behind the wheel really helped him to stop the fear controlling his driving. And he said to me that he started to drive on local roads first and to take short trips on the major motorways. And he always had Joan there if he needed to take a break. And he found that it really helped him to build his confidence again until he took that long trip back to Bath, which is about 4 hours from where he lives. Now, number 7, lastly, don't set yourself up to have a panic attack every time you drive. Because believe me, our preconceived expectations, our thinking and our intentions create what we focus on. And this isn't just driving, this is everything in life. But if you're going to set yourself up as soon as you get in the car and you turn your car on and you're looking in your rear vision mirror and you put it into drive, if you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to have a panic attack today, I don't know how I'm going to cope, you most likely will have one. You're setting up that situation in your mind that it's going to happen. And if you like this episode, you want to learn more about the paranormal, I'm always sharing new information that nobody else does. Please hit the subscribe button. Send me a comment. Send me one of your stories. Now, before we finish up today, I wanted to retell one of my most memorable paranormal disruptions to my driving. This is one that a friend and I had when we were driving to the west coast of Tasmania back in 2020. And I've called this experience Headaches and Paranormal Hitchhikers. Now, my friend and I were driving to a country town when I suddenly developed a massive headache, and it just came out of nowhere. Now, I don't get headaches. I know this is a fact, unless I'm getting sick or there's paranormal beings present in the vicinity, because I know that headaches, changes in my speech, and getting brain fog are some of my paranormal symptoms, you might call them. So I kept on driving, and I just observed this headache and where it went. Now, this headache came in through the driver's doorway. It came in from sort of the center of the road because we drive on the left-hand side of the road. So that tells me instantly that there may have been an accident in that particular site where there were some paranormal beings just hanging around, feeding off the imprints, as they do. Now, this constant pulsing pain moved to the middle area on the left side of my head, sitting sort of above my ear. And it felt as if something or someone was energetically sitting between my friend and myself. Now, was this being enjoying a ride? Or was it there because it picked up on an emotional imprint that was in my car, that I was carrying, that my friend was carrying? Who knows? But after driving 20 kilometres or so, the headache suddenly disappeared. Gone. Vanished. It just disappeared. And I said out loud, oh my goodness, I'm glad that left. And my friend slowly turned and she stared at me saying, so you felt that too. She said, my head felt like it was going to split in half. I didn't know what to do or what to say, so I didn't say anything. Now, had this energy being been looking to simply hitch a ride somewhere? Or did it have other intentions? Was it checking each of us out to possibly be a new host? Was it checking me out because I'm an energy worker? Remember, these dark and demonic beings can sometimes feel a little bit threatened or a little bit anxious around energy workers. Why was this being located in a totally desolate place? There was not a house in sight. Was it there because of an accident or a trauma that had occurred there? We'll never know. But the strength of its energy told me it was a high-level demonic being. Now, I'm travelling that road again very, very soon, and it will be interesting to see if another travelling buddy pops into our car. Now, I don't remember the exact location because this is like a 3.5 hour, 4 hour drive, and about 3/4 of it is just the Tasmanian outback. It all looks the same to me. So I'll be keen to see if my friend who's coming with me this time, this is a different friend, if she and I experience this paranormal hitchhiker and our headaches again. I will let you know in a future episode. So in episode 75, we are exploring angels versus demons. Are they at loggerheads? Are they fighting the great war of good over evil? Or are they simply present for another reason? And you may find my perspective rather informative or slightly challenging. But listen anyway, as I have inside information from my 30 years plus of observing and working with the angelic beings, but also the dwellers of darkness. And there's more to this story than what you think. So I look forward to seeing you in episode 75. So thank you for joining me today. And don't forget, if you want to share a paranormal experience just with myself, or you would like me to share one of your experiences through my podcast, you can do a voice recording, or you can write out your experience and I will read it exactly as you have written. You can email me at spiritualbeing44@gmail.com. And for information on paranormal house clearing, you can visit my website, Spiritual Being. You will find the address in the description box. And I look forward to sharing this spooky space again with you next week. And remember, life is perfectly paranormal.